mass and shelling and lots of sort of explosions around. The close was like 10 meters, covering me with like sand and dirt and whatever. Almost knocked me down. And it was like nonstop that was happening. You know, it was clearly very intense. It was clearly very important for both sides. It was clear that this was a, you know, it was a place where we wouldn't move and they wouldn't give up.
And now, the Dave Kinchin Show.
August 12th, 2023, and it's great to have you with us as we continue our look at the war in Ukraine, bringing you voices from the battlefield. Jose, that's his military name, code name, if you will, started out in the trenches. You know, he signed up for the military in his country and went out there to defend his nation, and you heard a little bit from him there with an earlier chat that we've done, but we've got a brand new conversation. He's working in a more, as he says, a more intellectual capacity now, working on weaponry, working with engineers, and we got to catch up with him and get his thoughts on where things are on the ground now as this awful, devastating, tragic war continues. Great to have Jose back on the show. We got, what, north of 13 hours of Ukraine coverage right here on this special. Here is the latest installment. Jose.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's been some time here.
Yeah, I was missing you.
Missing you too. Yeah, missing you too. You know, we always keep track of the headlines, and you know, sometimes I wonder, is it you? I never want to be like a, you know, too bombarding, you know, because there's so much going on over there, you know. But we always appreciate your updates. I mean, 530 days, I think. Wait, hang on. Let me see. 534 days. Since the war began, and here we are. How are you doing? How are your spirits? What's new in your world as this scourge continues here?
Oh, I am tired.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted with what I do. I'm exhausted, frankly. The break, which I hope I'm getting very soon, but every time I look at, you know, people, you know, sitting on the front line, coming in and out, being people evacuated, being evacuated into sort of deeper land hospitals, and you know, every time I see, you know, more families being evacuated from Kupiansk, where I've been a number of times, met with locals there, local authorities. Just, you know, when you see somebody suffering disproportionately more, you sort of tell to yourself, you know, shut up, and keep pushing. Well, no, I'm relatively speaking, I'm doing very well. I think I do something that is very useful, and that makes your day, you know, that makes your week, makes you, you know, content and in some way, I don't know, happy is not the word, but content, that's the word.
Sure.
But overall, I think this is all going under negative scenario, and I'm afraid that this scenario is written not in Kiev and not in Moscow, and this is an idiotic scenario. And that scenario, I think the pinnacle of that is that when one of the world leaders comes out and says, Ukraine doesn't need F-16. For me, this is the orgasm of the idiocy. Sitting far away and some, you know, thinking and planning something and deciding what people need and what people don't need on the front line. And I'm sure that the intention of United States was not to have an endless war, because that, you know, that would be such a perverted view of the world, perverted sort of way of thinking of political masterminding. Just, you know, I reject that idea. This is not, it's not human. This is not logical. This is not in any way strategic. But the result is exactly that. Having endless war, giving, spoon-feeding exactly the amount of medication that allows patient not to die, but not to live. And provoking the other side to engage more and more and more and more resources, and provoking obviously China to, you know, to stimulate all the dictatorships of this world to provide obviously their for Russia.
Yeah, it's are you still there? I know sometimes the signal can break up a little bit.
I'm not in the best coverage, obviously.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Communication-wise, yeah. Sorry about that.
No, I totally understand. My gosh.
So yeah, that's not the smartest. Yeah, that's not the smartest way of running things. But I don't think we have an option to do anything with it. Like it's the time when the victory could have been decisive and powerful and quick is gone. Now it's a time of this exhaustive, massive, complicated. Also, you know, if you think about that, and if you talk to Russians. Slowly but naturally, when the country is in the big war, when people are being killed, and obviously whoever was intelligent was trying to leave Russia and now is sitting and sort of emotionally bleeding, you know, understanding what's going on and what's going to happen to them, because they will pay for everything. That I believe. And whether it will take a year or 20 years, the payment, the bill, it will come. No, it's hard to imagine that you know, they wouldn't have that they would just they would get away with they would get away with such a destruction and everything.
Yeah, it's as time goes on, and one of the things that can be a bit distressing here in the States is that, you know, with all the news, I mean, we still see the Ukrainian flags flying in solidarity on households and, you know, even on cars and things like that. But, you know, it's been my fear that, you know, as this thing goes on, we lose sense of what's happening. We see the headlines, but they're not carried as in such of a big, they're not as big of a spread in terms of story coverage as it was when it all began. I mean, I'm reading now, you know, Ukrainian forces, CNN saying that, you know, Ukrainian forces are making some gains, small gains on the southern front. You know, there was a Ukrainian commander that claimed movement forward, but, you know, Russian officials have reported heavy combat in the area. There's shelling, Russian shelling in Kharkiv has intensified. You know, Moscow's trying to reclaim territory there. Ukrainian officials have ordered mandatory evacuations, and it's just especially around the northeast, and it's so hard to see. And the shelling in Kharkiv killed two people and injured several more on Thursday. It's just, you know, I mean, what do you think can help put this back on the front? I mean, it's still there. I don't want to say it's off the stove, but what can put this more at the front burner, do you think, at this point in time, so that, you know, people understand this thing is still going. I mean, we know it's still going on, but there's still a massive crisis going on here in the fight for freedom. Sorry about that. I think we had lost you, and then he's coming back on here. Technical issues, obviously, in a war zone, completely understandable, no doubt about it. Jose, do we have you back with us?
Sorry, yeah.
No worries.
For a second.
I don't know how much you were here, and I was just kind of going over some of the latest headlines over there, but just the idea of getting this, you know, making sure this stays on the front burner in the press around the world. I mean, you know, as time goes on here, I don't know about other parts of the world, but I feel like here in the States, it gets pushed more towards the bottom, and this is still a crisis that's active here. And what are your thoughts on that here?
Well, it's natural. Yeah. How can people in Ukraine, I mean, if you travel to Kiev or Lviv further away from the front line, I have friends now coming from Europe, from different organizations, and they pop by, sort of, they try to talk to me. But they all say, we are amazed how peaceful, how happy, how alive Kharkiv is, Kyiv is, or Lviv, or Ivano-Frankivsk. But that's natural. You know, people, you know, go to work, people wake up, they have breakfast, they are in the war country, but they are not on the front line. And, you know, kids came back, and we lost a lot of population. By the way, big benefit for Europe. Europe received a lot of very educated, very smart, very active population. These are not, you know, millions of alcoholics and mentally sort of damaged and uneducated and lazy and incapable. These are all capable and nice citizens. And I hope they come back. I hope Ukraine makes an effort. But we lost a lot of population. Now some of the population comes back, some of the kids come back. And so if Ukrainians behave that way and they try to keep some normality in their life, how can we blame Americans for not crying every day, you know, over dinner, how, you know, miserable life is on the front line? Obviously, you know, that's natural. And I think people have shown, people as nations, in the US and everywhere, in France, you know, in Norway and everywhere, they have shown enough understanding, solidarity, decisiveness, but there is a limit to it. And that's what Putin and the whole bunch of animals in his camp accounting for. That democracies work in a different way. They do have limits because of the electoral sentiment and tiredness. And there is an election cycle, which now United States is approaching. And you can see that, I should be very careful commenting on American politics. And I certainly don't want to take any side, because it's complicated even from far away. All the emotions and all the different psychotypes of people supporting different psychotypes of politicians. And all the racial tensions and all the economic inequalities and U.S. different regions, how they perceive, and all the budgetary issues and the inflation, which you know, everyone was clear that this will hit after the COVID, but some people were saying no, everything is under control. Laughable. Never believed that. Told my children that you will see the wave of it, but it's a natural thing. And when you don't produce and you print money, there's no. But anyway, so U.S. has a lot to worry about, and we certainly should not expect that the neither for U.S. citizens, not for U.S. government, Ukraine will ever be the number one point on the agenda. Nevertheless, that's the unfortunate portion, that when things could have been mended, could have been fixed, could have been dealt with, there was no decisiveness, and there is still no decisiveness, and that's bad. When you all unfinished business haunts you, and in very unexpected, very unpredictable, very sudden way. So we have bigger sort of thing to defend jointly, but it's not being done. And again, I don't want to blame, because you can hear in American politics different sort of different rhetorics. And again, this is all comes to election, and this is all for a democratic world. This is our pain, our problem, our imperfection is that, you know, this electoral, the politicians are saying what we want to hear. Then the cycle comes, then they do something, then they again try to say what we want to hear before the elections. Or they leave, they mess up, they don't clean up their mess, then they come back and they blame others for their mess, but they're saying that everything will be hunky-dory with them coming back. It's just, nobody has invented better system than elections and democracy, in my view. I certainly don't support the Russian or North Korean way, or Chinese, for that matter. But we do have issues with our systems, and these weaknesses are being exploited the last 15 years by this China, whatever, bigger circle camp, to the fullest extent possible. And Ukraine is a point where it's all being, you know, all being transformed into actions, into blood and explosions. I don't know what to say more. I think we should push it to the point where it's done. I mean, one thing that for senators, for people who talk to senators, to, you know, to talk to politicians, I think the same view as I suggested for myself is the best one, is you just think about people who for this 500 whatever days are in the front line. You know, they eat, they sleep together, they smell like shit, they carry their you know, their compatriots, their friends, injured without limbs, without. I have worked with one of the clinics with sort of few cases. I've seen how it looks. I wish nobody, you know, out of our audience, out of your audience, ever sees that. Yeah. It's the person taking apart and then assembled back. I think Ukrainian doctors are doing incredible job, unbelievable job. How they work with that, but the amount of suffering, amount of absolutely unnecessary, absolutely, you know, unexplainable evil that comes with that. Just I don't see any, like, you see, when you often see, look at things, you can say, okay, everything has many sides. Oh, because of this, because of that, there is some benefit of it. Maybe it will go that way. Maybe I'm too close. I don't see any benefit, any explanation why. Well, other than one aspect, which I think is positive, is that with every shell, with every rocket, people who ever wanted to speak this bloody Russian language, they're switching to Ukrainian language. They are starting to think that they are pushing the slaves out of their system, out of their blood. The slavery of the Soviet Russian Empire sort of thing, you know, which was with rewritten history, with kids taught at school that Lenin is a grandfather that always cared about you. This all this bullshit that they were pushing in people's brain, it all comes out of the system, like detoxication. But the price that people are paying for it is just incredible. Anyway, so we should talk less about suffering, otherwise it's sure. Just turns into this emotional.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Where are you in the country right now? And I mean, can you kind of give an update on kind of just, you know, what you're doing kind of day to day? And I know you said you'll be back in the field over the next couple of days. I mean, obviously we would never ask you for your exact location for security reasons, of course, but like from what you're comfortable stating, like, you know, kind of what's where are you now and like what's the next couple of days going to look like, do you think, in terms of your duties?
Well, my duty is quite intellectual and interesting in that intellectual sort of point of view, but the whereabouts over the last 10 days, I visited pretty much the entire south and the central part where the Donetsk is itself. And I also visited all the port facilities that were heavily bombarded over the last 2 weeks. So that's, I can give you a picture of Kherson, for example, which is under bombardments every day. It was occupied very quickly. Nice provincial sort of slow agrarian agricultural center with large agricultural markets, like a commodity, sort of large commodity exchanges, small port, river joining the big river, Dnieper River, joining the Black Sea. Peaceful, quiet people, never sort of showing too much of Ukrainian rhetorics or otherwise Russian rhetorics, just neutral, common, simple people working. So Russians came, they occupied quickly. People were surprised they came on the streets and this was the news they were showing, you know, who are you? Why did you come here? Get out of here. And then slowly there was a lot of killing, torturing, in basements and raping and kidnapping. And there are some business people that I know personally that disappeared in that region. Just disappeared, period. Nobody knows where they are. Some money, obviously some assets escaped, disappeared. But and then Ukrainians, but then they came to Nikolaev, and then Nikolaev had presented the defense line, thanks to, I don't want to name names, but there's sure. One general which was holding front there, which was patriotic and sort of the real military. There was a governor and there was one of the parliamentary deputy who is who has a special forces background, who simply dropped his briefcase and took a car and went to his hometown. So the three of them kind of mobilized people, and Russians couldn't go. So I was at that point where Russians stopped, and the way it looks, all the houses, all the little pavilions, the little booths where people used to sell ice cream and hot dogs, shredded with fragments of artillery shelling. But the local authorities, they brought a brand new, those little pavilions with lots of glass, and they put them next to it, and this local people are happily sort of preparing some, you know, dumplings and ice cream, and, you know, serve you a beer or root beer on the road. It looks like a, you know, surreal. It's just then you come further and you come to Kherson, and it's a dead city because it's under shelling. You know, we were all day working in the city, going back and forth, driving. We saw 10 people who are obviously underprivileged type, you know, like not like a poor sort of half drunk. We saw 10 or 15 people just going, doing their whereabouts, but quickly moving between the streets. And there was this strange view where some grandmothers sitting on the playground in central Kherson, and there is one child swinging. it was really, I mean, it's just such an apocalyptic view.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, and this is like, if you would take any agricultural portions of US, you know, that city would not be much different from any of those cities in US. But what the government has done, and I was amazed again, on every bus stop, they put, well, as far as I could see, but it looks like on every bus stop, they put a bomb shelter, which is a, I don't know, like a very thick concrete wall compartment with a sort of a complicated way of internal walls. So it gives you a protection of a couple of walls. Mm. And you know, in case of shelling, person can jump in and be in a relative safety, because it's, if a direct hit, nothing will help. But, and you know, and that happened very quickly. And but that's another sign how it looks. Mm. Obviously, ports are being destroyed, and they systematically destroy now infrastructure. Interesting that people started now buying all fuel and batteries and everything mentally. Everyone, it's like, you know, 1st of August, that's the time when people start thinking about fall. Yeah. So people understand that Russians will do another war on energy starting September. But everyone is prepared. Everyone is, people learn very quickly. Ukrainians are very unfortunately not very ambitious and aggressive, but fortunately very organized and very hardworking. You have plenty of food, so everything is being harvested. Everything is, again, harvested, but they are now targeting all the elevators and all the facilities where grain and everything being stored. So it's difficult for agrarians, but, you know, but still, country is living, country is working, and country is not giving up. I don't feel that anywhere I go, anywhere I talk to people, even in Kherson, like we were standing there with sort of optical devices, observing the other side of the river where the Russians are. It was funny, a man came out of his house and he said, "Gentlemen, go to the left, because on the right there is a sniper." And he lives in his house.
Oh my God.
And he has a couple of military looking across the river. And he says, "Just go to the left, because there is a sniper there." You might say he came out of his house under the sniper sort of targeting, came to us, and he gave us advice. It's real. It's such a mixture of normal human behavior and this war type of stuff. I don't know what else I can give you.
Been incredibly vivid, the picture you just painted. I mean, does it differ now? I mean, like when the war first started, you know, you were one of those Ukrainians who, you know, you took up arms and you joined the military and you were on the ground. I know you said your role is more intellectual now. I mean, is it, how does it change your perspective? I mean, you've seen, you know, because obviously you've seen so much ugliness on the ground. I mean, does it change your perspective in kind of a, when you have different roles out there? So I know at one point you were working on like technology, right? And some of the weaponry, if I remember correctly.
That I'm still doing, but okay, I can give you one example, because it's sure. kind of, it's better to do illustrate things. And
yeah,
I think it was second or third day of the war. Yeah, and there was such a mixture where you had police, armed police out there digging trenches next to them. There would be some engineer or IT specialist programmer, sort of first time in his life taking the shovel in his hands, and then would have be some special forces, special forces unit that would be digging in the ground, knowing what they do, and sort of it's such a mixture. And I had the commander of the unit I joined, pointing finger at him. This is where you are. This is where you look. Any tank comes, you burn it to the ground. So we were standing there, and then all of a sudden I turn around and I see that there is a unit of a large caliber machine gun being established right behind us. So meaning that the moment it starts working, the moment we raise our head, we get destroyed by that machine gun. And you know, these simple things which you as a civilian you never see, but I thought about that, but then this one of the people from that special services like a special forces unit behind us came to us, and he said, "What kind of idiot told you to establish position here?" I said, "Well, my commander."
Fog of war? No.
No, but my commander was civilian, you know, 72 hours before that. So he also acted. No, it was not all funny. It was certainly not funny in many ways. When you are in the trench with -4 and you came with sort of light clothing. Mm-hmm. That's not funny. By the morning, you really feel like your life has disappeared from your body. It's like evaporated.
Yeah.
So that was, it was confusion. It was fear. It was physical exhaustion. But most importantly, it was confusion. You didn't know what to do. Like, you didn't know what happens next. And the only attitude that could help you to survive was fuck it.
Yeah.
Be whatever it will be, I have to be here. And that was the comment. But I'm telling you that out of, I don't know, 500 people that were around me on that sort of strip of land, I'm sure that all of them are on the front line somewhere. Some of them are obviously gone, but all of them are extremely exhausted after such a long time without normal. One thing is, it was on the Donetsk front just 5-6 days ago. We were standing, and I came from a sort of a barrack that had all the shower and everything, and we were standing next to a lake, and there was a guy next to me, very clever guy, very interesting, some 55, 57, but very decent guy. And he's standing, and I'm looking at this lake, and I said, and it's very hot, very, very hot. It was a very hot week. And we were standing and looking at this lake, and I said, "Would it be nice to swim? He looks at it, he said, "No need." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, I'm used now to this life without shower, without any comfort. Like, I said, wait a minute, you don't take shower? No, I do take once a week or whatever, once in 2 weeks. But I don't feel like I need a fresh clothing, you know, fresh bed linen, you know, like his coffee comes in a meat tin container. Like, it, you know, people getting used to things. But
yeah.
when you think, you know, how long and how difficult it is, and also think about that. Somebody leaves. Again, we come back to suffering. I don't want to.
I know it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's try to bring something more positive.
Yeah.
And I also have to go because I have
sure.
I have a meeting. I have a couple of engineers waiting for me. I have to
okay.
join sure. them. But ask me a couple of questions and let's try to be
positive,
more
yeah.
constructive and positive. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things, you were talking about, the determination, I think, of the Ukrainian people. I think at one point, one of the things that caught me by surprise early on in our chats was how, when the war was going on, you know, people were still, gas stations were running, restaurants like cafe. We talked to one couple a woman who, was working, she had a cafe and she was keeping it open. And so, you know, people were trying to do as much as they could, for business to be the business of life, to be as normal as possible. I mean, I think I talked with one woman who, worked in, some form of IT, and you know, she was in an office. You know, I mean, of course, there were times when she would have to take cover, of course, you know. But that's always been really amazing to me. I think that, you know, a testament to the spirit of the people, of, you know, doing whatever you can to keep things as normal as possible, even with everything going on. And I wonder how much of that you're still seeing at times. I know you said population has declined in some areas, but of the people still there, I mean, are you still seeing some of that?
There was a major hit on the Mykolaiv port with the rockets and this UAVs destroying the wheat terminals. Mm. I was there. I was at Mykolaiv just 4 days, 5 days ago.
Yeah.
And I was there. I clearly remember a year ago, but July of 22, I came to Mykolaiv when the front line was between the Kherson and Mykolaiv. Mm-hmm. And I remember how the city looked, and Mykolaiv looked like Kherson today. Because when you have artillery, it's much more unpredictable, quick, without warning hittings. When you have rockets and all that shit that flies, the UAVs, you have the warning, and it's a much, much more selective sort of bombardment. So at the time when the artillery was working on Mykolaiv, it was same picture, no people in the street, everything is dead. This time I came to Mykolaiv, it didn't look like Paris,
right, of
but
course,
it looked like a city alive.
Mm-hmm.
People are running, you know, shops are working. Now, everyone is going to work in the morning, like all fun. And again, I cannot give more information, but even course, with this sure. fort, it's being destroyed, it's being this, being that. Also, but system is functioning. System is functioning. People act, they replace, they fix, they clean up, they, you know, it's a living. Living creature, the state, the city, the port, the business. So it all naturally comes back to be alive, unless being bombarded right now. And it's amazing how the longevity, the ability to survive, to balance itself is amazing. So and you can see that in Kharkiv, same thing. You can see how much of return, how much of rebuilding, reconnecting, relaunching is happening, and it's beautiful. It's really something that some like a it's very human. It's very nice. And when you see what people coming back, you know, with their kids, with their possessions, with their, you know, they fix their apartments. It's really the picture. I'm sure we will have all lots of photo, you know, exhibitions where people will be showing those shots of sort of signs of life coming back after death was sort of breathing there. But it is amazing. It is amazing. And two cities where you can, well, another one is Chernihiv, is also a city where on the northern part of Ukraine, where they came from the animal country, and they destroyed a lot, and then they were pushed back, and you can see that, you know, that things come back fairly quickly with a lot of energy and effort of people. I mean, schools now is a massive building of bomb shelters. It's massive effort to build bomb shelters in school, because they, by law now, cannot open up kindergarten or school without establishing their bomb shelter. It's unfortunate, but it's the new reality. Russians introduced to us, and now we are introducing to them. And you know, the how laughable it is when somebody is saying that Russian territory should not be bombarded. Sorry, beg your pardon. What?
They've completely invaded a sovereign nation. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm speechless. I mean, it's not being said openly, but certainly they push for it. Russia should survive because they are a nuclear state. They should be destroyed because they're a nuclear state, and as soon as possible. How can nuclear state behave like that? That's, I mean, they need to be destroyed. They will be destroyed. The only question is how much suffering and global destruction this will bring. We will allow this to bring. And there need to be end to it soon, because every day this war exists, every day destabilization for global economy, the political destabilization, human lives, ecology. Just think about the ecological impact of it. It's just unbelievable how much of damage is being done. And you know that all the explosives are very toxic. I was flying over the front line in the southern part, and I when you fly at night with the night vision, and when there is a 39 degree during the day, and then even 20 degree at night, that 19 degree difference brings very contrasting cooling dynamics to the metal objects versus soil or vegetation or trees. So when you fly like, you know, 3-4 hours after the sunset, the contrast is such that when you fly on the night vision, all these mayans that are installed in land, they work like projectors, you know, like light bulbs. And you see the entire field is lit. Like every meter and a half, there is a mine of some kind. It's just unbelievable how much of shit has been installed there by Russians. And that explains why it's difficult for Ukrainians, because, you know, not having aviation, not having a proper anti-mining equipment, not having ability to kill, to allow Russians to kill, you know, hundreds of thousands of your soldiers, because everyone is exploding when you come, when you're being shot at, shelled at, and exploding on mines. It's kind of difficult. So that's what Russians did. They just mined. They have, since the Second World War, they have the largest arsenal of all this crap that is, yes, it explodes one out of every second one. Like it doesn't work properly. But they put it. And it does explode when you step on it and when you drive it. All that crap is toxic, and all that crap has to be taken out of the ground. If somebody will have a chance, look up the First World War, Germany, France frontline. There are areas today in France which are national parks because you cannot go there. Water is toxic. It's still dangerous stepping on it, and nobody has enough money to clean up such a vast territory of land. Can you imagine? First World War, center of Europe.
Yeah.
When you think about, and we are talking about plastic cups. Yeah, plastic cups are bad. Or the wet, how do you call it? Wet serviettes, the napkins. Yes, it's bad. It's bad for the ocean. But think about those. By now, I'm sure it's millions of tons of explosives that have been either exploded. I was standing in the port of Mykolaiv. And if you look at the map, you see the Kherson is where the Dnieper comes. And then the current in the Black Sea is such that it all goes to Bulgaria. And you heard the news that corpse of cows came to Bulgaria from Kherson when they exploded that the water tank, Kakhovka dam. So all the debris, all the fridges and some of the mattresses and some like hundreds of thousands of tons of debris came to Mykolaiv from Kherson, and some of it came to Odessa, and some of it came to Bulgaria. All the animals, all the people as well, unfortunately. So this is what Russians do. And would they be allowed to continue that? Can you allow these people? I don't want to talk about level of civilization. Just it's word people is difficult to use. But can you allow this system to control nuclear arsenal? Can we afford? We as a human sort of civilization, can we afford having a country like that? And more to that, it's not just country. Now they're grouping. Look at this, and they're creating the whole system of countries, and now they're playing with artificial intelligence. And let's read all those horror, novels written about the industrial sort of takeover of the civilization by evil with robots and just
very Orwellian.
It cannot happen. The war weapon and the artificial intelligence are now coming together in a very, very complicated twist. And you know your military and your politicians, they know that.
Scary.
It is, and it needs reaction. It needs resistance, because these are lives of our children. Not only they will have +45 on the outside, in Celsius. Not only they will have no clear water to drink and swim, but they will also have some sort of a system of suppression of your right to express your opinion, right to move around, right of religious belief. We cannot allow this to exist. Yes, maybe we'll all die, but we have to stand to it. We have to stand up, and it's a joint effort. And again, we should not waste our life on this useless, tragical sort of talks, but there has to be pressure on all the governments to bring this under control, and obviously Ukrainians have to carry their side of things, which they do, and we do criticize our government and we work with it, and we have a good memory. We kind of take all the records of what they do wrong, and this will be time when we will sort of when we will deal with them. But at this stage, we cannot afford, kind of, we have to be united. We have to work together. Yeah. And that's what, and they do, they push, they try their best. That's what we will have to do. It's our destiny.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And at the same time, we have to, you know, we have to come to Kherson and see how that one child swings on the swing and life goes on despite anything.
Yeah, that's right. It's true. No matter how apocalyptic it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I have to run. Jose, because the whole group is waiting for me. Very nice.
Always a pleasure. You too. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir. And continued wishes for your safety and for your entire team as well.
Thank you very much.